I don't believe this. Came in off the tree, and just look at this. Well, that is unbelievable. I haven't seen that in such a long time.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Bogey or Better podcast. I'm Cameron and we got Dylan. What's going on, bud?
What's going on, guys?
Hanging in there?
Yeah, doing good. Just got home from walking 9 holes.
That's impressive.
With the wife, yeah. And it was actually, she loves, you know, running and walking. She was on the track team in high school, and so she likes to walk and cardio and all that crap, so. It was like a combination of our two favorite things.
Yeah.
She gets to walk and I get to play golf, so.
I'm surprised you didn't pull a John Daly and while she was walking, you drove a cart.
I figured I could use some exercise, and honestly, it keeps my back a little looser. Yeah. So,
I found that I play better walking because I don't swing as hard because I don't want to go walking too far in the woods.
Yeah,
because it really penalizes you when you're walking. Yeah. So I tend to swing really easy, just play nice and simple, and just so I can keep walking straight.
Yep. And honestly, on a day like today where they've had a lot of water, a lot of rain, and it's going to be cart path only, it kind of makes sense to just go ahead and walk.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about, you know, that way all your clubs are with you at that point.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where you go, so.
Yeah, well, because I played just a little bit earlier than you did today, and, you know, I was aiming for sides of the fairway where the cart path was on.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult. Like, I mean, the same shot on the other side of the fairway, you know, I could shoot it with a rangefinder, but the angles could be a little bit different, the wind and things like that, where it's, and I don't have my clubs there, like you were saying. So I only have a pull cart, though. And that really, like, tires out your shoulder after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So having that push cart like you have makes a big difference, I bet.
Yeah. I love the push carts. It's just, you know, a crappy used one from Played Against Sports. It was, like, $30. But since she likes it so much, since Carly likes it so much, I'll just give her that one. And I'll buy me a nice one from Amazon.
Yeah.
Or eBay.
Yeah, I mean, they last, too. I mean, it's not, not a lot that goes into them.
Yeah, as long as you don't beat them up, they're fine.
Awesome.
I want one of those ones at the Disney golf course.
Yes.
Where it just, you have a little GPS clip on your belt, and it literally just follows you. It's fantastic.
It is ideal.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've talked about. We've talked about it before. Like, I don't mind walking, but I'd love to have a caddy or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they make like pull carts or just even walking carts that follow you.
Mm-hmm. The remote control ones, yeah.
Yeah, they're just quite expensive.
Yeah, they can run you up to $1,000.
Yeah.
Even more. Yeah.
I've seen a company that makes retrofitting, so you can put it on your push cart you already have.
Really?
Yeah.
That would
just
be cool.
Replace like the rear axle with this.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty good. It basically just turns with, you know, those back wheels, adds more power to one side and stuff like that. So they say it's pretty good. Balance can have an issue because it's not, you know, the cart wasn't made for that.
Right.
But overall, if you wanted to save money, I did see that. I thought that was
interesting. I mean, it's pretty effortless unless you're going up a huge hill to just push it. I mean, and Charwood, Charwood's like one of the very few courses that I will walk.
Yeah.
Because, like, I walked Oak Hills one time with Aaron, who we've had on the podcast, and that was pretty tough. But
Charwood's relatively
Charwood's
flat.
Charwood's just so flat.
The back nine's a little bit more.
Yeah.
You got a lot more par fives on the back nine.
Yeah.
But if you walk the front nine, it's really not too bad.
No.
But you played good.
Yeah, shot 3 over. You know, my irons are, I'm continuing, like, every round, it just seems like I'm getting better with those irons. Like, I'm starting to find the center of the club face a lot more. And I was struggling a little bit with my yardages with my wedges. I was hitting them well. I was just leaving them short. And I think it was cold. It was, you know, it's a little cold now, and the wind was kind of everywhere today.
It was, yeah.
So it was kind of hard to figure out the yardages with the, like, 90 yards and in. But besides that, I mean, I feel confident in my chipping. I'm doing my version of bump and runs now, where I take, wait for it, guys. I know you're gonna think I'm crazy with this little lofted club, but I am taking a 56 degree.
Ooh.
I know, it's risky, but I take that back in my stance.
My lob chipping is with a 58. Bump and runs a 56.
And yeah, I take that back in my stance. A little putter stroke, use the bounce, and it works.
Yeah. Well, and you can do that with a higher, you know, you don't have to put a ton of spin on even like a 60 Mm-mm. degree.
No. Yeah, like with my little like 20 yard pitches and stuff, I'm confident in the lob wedge in my 60 degree.
Yeah.
But yeah. The only thing I am not confident in right now is my bunker game, which I just don't have anywhere to really practice it.
You don't have anywhere to practice, problem. And there's no rakes. And there was a ton of water in all the bunkers today, really.
Yeah.
I think everybody's bunker game has gone downhill.
Yeah. So I've just been watching some YouTube videos about it, and that's about it. But and kind of practicing the stroke here at home. So
yeah.
I got high ceilings in my living room, so I can kind of swing pretty freely.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue into kind of what we wanted to talk about today. Yeah. A lot of people don't have the ability to play golf right now, being the weather, that it's really in the dead of winter. And a lot of places, the restrictions because of COVID is a lot more a lot more restricted, and they're not able to golf. And so we were talking about if you were stuck at home, couldn't either weather-wise or restricted-wise, you couldn't go out and play, but you wanted to keep your golf game going or even improve by just being at home, the ways that you could do that and the ways that me and you do that as well. So we were doing some research, and there's a ton of different ways. We'll go through them. Simple ones, you know, putting at home is it's just so important because that's where most of your strokes gained can be found, is in good putting. And whether you have carpet or regular hardwood, concrete, whatever it is, you know, you can practice your putting. And there was a couple drills I thought that were really interesting because practicing distance control is obviously super important. So they said to use a coin and a ball, however many feet, 5, 10 feet, and have the second ball that you putt towards that other ball on top of the coin. You need them to touch, but not enough where it makes the other ball fall off the coin. I thought that was super interesting because not distance control even more, because you can have it hit the ball, you know, but you really want it to just like on that last rotation hit that ball so that it makes contact without knocking it over. I thought that was interesting because you could spend a lot of time trying to get that to work.
Yeah, putting at home has been like the main thing that I've been doing. And I mean, my putting now is the best it has ever been. And it has probably shaved 8 or 9 strokes, probably.
Yeah.
On average. And, you know, I have hardwood floors, but we have a rug in our living room, and I actually learned this drill from the pro who did my putter fitting for my Scotty. You take 2 golf balls, you can either hit one of them or you can just place it, you know, 5, 10 feet, however big your rug is, and then you want to try to hit that ball with the ball you're putting. And that just kind of helps you with lining up, with aim, you know, speed, everything like that. And the other one is basically the same thing, except for you're not really trying to hit the ball. You just close your eyes. You line up, you close your eyes, and then you just use pure feel on trying to get the ball, you know, as close to that one as you can. So that's just, you know, working on pure speed.
Yeah.
On putting, and just helps you kind of feel the club head, kind of helps you with, you know, figuring out where the club head needs to be to hit the center of the face, and then, you know, using your feel for speed.
Mm-hmm. That was really there. And honestly, most of the posts about practicing at home are focused on putting, because even with people like me with these shorter ceilings, you know, you're not going to be able to swing a driver in here. So you can really focus on putting. And I saw another one that really talked about the difference in putting strokes from scratch and tour professionals to average golfers, that average golfers use their body and head more than scratch golfers and professionals do. Professionals have no body movement or head movement. It's literally just the small rotation. And there's no hips firing. I tend to do that, you know, because it's not the same swing as a, you know, regular iron swing. You know, it's literally just your upper body that's just going to rotate. It shouldn't slide. Your head shouldn't move. So they said practice that feeling of keeping your head still and just hitting through the ball.
When TaylorMade was doing, like, their big YouTube stuff, like with Dustin and Tiger and Rory, you know, Jason Day, everybody like that, they did a putting segment, and Dustin Johnson said the only difference really between a 3-handicap golfer and a 10-handicap golfer is putting. They're probably going to be striking the ball near the same way with, you know, every other club, but the only difference, those 7 strokes, is all putting. They're, you know, 4-handicap and lower, or maybe 5-handicap and lower, the putting is going to get a lot better in that kind of area of player. So that, you know, so for you guys out there averaging, you know, 90s or, you know, low, mid to high 80s, low 90s, if you can just work on your putting and focus on that, it will shave a lot of strokes off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you think, A lot of those strokes are going to come from 3 putts as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's been times we hit a bad tee shot, second bad shot, you know, so we're on the green in 4, you know, so we're putting for bogey already. And a lot of times, you know, when we're already defeated, then, you know, you blow it past. It's like when you're on the green, you basically, at any point in the green, you need to 2-putt. Yeah. There should be no, so if you're far away, focus on getting it close enough where you can confidently knock it in for one. Mm-hmm. Because the only way you're going to do that is by improving your putting, because three putts are what kills you. So if you have 6 or 7 of those around and you take that down to 1, you know, that's 5 strokes right there. And nothing's changed from the tee to green. And I mean, that's a big jump, because it's easier to make changes to putting and practice it than it is for, let's say, your driver. Because with the driver, you need a lot of space. You need a driving range.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. But with putting, you can do that every day at home, and you'll see large drops in your score from just putting.
And even if you don't physically putt a ball, like me, a lot of the times, because my dog will sometimes want to chase after the ball, I don't even hit a ball. I literally just practice my stroke. It's like while watching TV or something, and just kind of practice, you know, just getting that muscle memory in, and, you know, just feeling how, just kind of looking at how the putter head is arcing and everything like that. It helped tremendously. It really does.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else on putting, or?
No, that was all I've got on putting. The next thing I was going to move on to was practicing in front of a mirror or recording yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hate
looking at myself.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's important.
It does help. It does. Yeah, it does help.
Because I'll tell you, I mean, firsthand, what I think my swing looks like compared to what it actually is completely different. Mm-hmm. And it's just because we can't see it. We may think, yeah. Like today I noticed too, I felt like I was going really center in my backswing. I wasn't going too far inside until like I actually like stopped midway and saw how inside the club was going.
Yeah.
And because I'm trying, you know, I'm thinking I need to keep that club face closed, and that forces it inside instead of, you know, behind the club and up nice and vertically. And, you know, if I start the club super shallow, there's no way that I'm going to be able to shallow the club, because naturally I'm going to want to bring it back up to where it should be. But I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't know that unless I could actually see it. So,
yeah.
You know, if you can go outside, just like in your backyard or something, or if you have a little room, even with a wedge, you know, your shortest club, mm-hmm. and try and take like a full swing, record yourself, look in a mirror, and you know, you may have to watch a video on like where your swing should be, like key points. They talk about like the P system where they count it out, like P1 is address. And then, you know, P5, I think, is when like on the downswing, when your arms are parallel. If you look that up, you'll see, and then start to diagnose your own swing, because when you can see it in yourself, then you'll start to know the feeling that you're looking for. And then when you're hitting practice swings, you're trying to get that feeling. You're not trying to fight your old swing.
Right. Yep. Yeah, another thing, if you do have a yard, you know, you can pick up a golf net on Amazon for like $30. And, you know, obviously they have better ones that are a little more expensive, but the one I have is $30 and it works just fine. And get a little mat, and you can, you know, obviously the only thing I hate about hitting into a net is, you know, you don't get to see the ball flight. You don't get to, you know, see the shape or anything like that. But what you can do is you can actually get some athlete's foot spray and spray it on your, you know, the face of your driver, your irons, whatever. And that will tell you very much about where you're hitting the ball on the club face. It'll show you exactly where. And so that can be very helpful. Yeah, you won't see the shape or the flight, but you'll, you know, if you're hitting it in the center of the face, chances are it's going to be a good shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll at least give you some really good feedback on where you're hitting the ball on the face.
I've seen mats, too, that they're like old style couches where, you know, like if you put your hand on it and go one way, it's like dark, and when you put it goes light. They make golf mats like that where you put the ball down, you put your club, and you hit it, and it shows your path. And you know, if you partner that with, like you said, using that spray into a net, you can see where you hit the ball on your club face and your path. So like it's if you know, if you hit and your path was really out to in, and the, you know, and the ball was, let's say, off the toe, like, you know, it was going to be a poor shot, and you know what to work on, what to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just going hitting into a net and you're not trying to find ways,
it's not going
to
help.
It's not going to help you. Yeah. You'll just keep doing the same thing. So if you can really see, all right, my path was, you know, a little inside to out, I hit center of the club, you know that was going to be an ideal shot, and to keep going for that feeling. Even if you play a fade like or a cut like I do, you know, if it's center and it's really lightly inside or outside to in, you know, that's a repeatable type shot. So that's another that's another way, especially if you're not living in like a really cold climate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a place where you could be outside for a little while, you just can't go to the golf course, that's a really good way. Rick Shields talks about using a net and how sometimes people can get bored because, like you said, you're not seeing your ball flight. So you have to find ways to make it not necessarily, well, interesting, but make it where you can actually see improvement. So if you continually like spray your club face, even I've seen, you can get club face paper that sticks on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you can kind of see a couple shots at a time, you know, before you need to like reapply. You can do that as well. And then get like a mat like that. They're not expensive, where you can see your path of where, and you'll see like if you hit it fat, because a lot of times hitting off mats, they give false senses of when you actually hit. So it'll show you, it'll start getting dark like before the ball, and you know that you hit it a little fat. You can work on all those types of things.
And, you know, and a lot of this really helps, really gets you comfortable with feeling what you're doing on the course. On the course, you're not going to have the athlete's foot spray on your club, so at least I hope. If I ever got paired up with somebody who was spraying athlete foot spray on the club, I would just leave. But, you know, like me and Cam, I won't speak for you, but I can pretty much know exactly what I just did by how it feels in my hands after I hit. And I can feel if I hit it on the toe or the heel or on the lower side or higher side of the grooves or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think you're in the same boat. And that's because, you know, we do these things. We practice and we just start to get a feel for what you're doing. And when that happens, you can really start to correct yourself on the course, you know, before things really start to blow up in your face and blow up in your score.
Yeah. And that was another thing, was like learning course management and golf strategy, understanding danger zones. Like it gave an example saying something is 225 carry over water with 3 wood is doable, but would it be better to hit a 7-iron before the water?
Boring.
It's boring. It is extremely boring. But for someone that's trying to break 100 or break 90, even 80.
Don't listen to me, guys. I have to not listen to myself, too.
Yeah. So it's okay. that's all our head. When we think, maybe I should lay up. That sound that Dylan made, that boring sound, rings in all of our heads. Because we're like, you know, one time out of 10, I'm going to make it. This is the same thing with, always picking driver on a par 5. Yeah. It's like, oh, we want to so bad. But you could hit, you know, 2 5-irons in a little wedge onto the green. It's boring, but
yeah, hitting what you're comfortable with on the tee helps so much more than you can imagine. And I proved that today. I literally did not have a driver in my bag because I just sold my M6 on eBay and am waiting for my new Ping G410 to arrive. And I literally played golf today with just the highest club I had was a 3-wood. And, you know, on the par 5s, I hit 3-wood, and then I hit a 7-iron, and then I hit a wedge, and I was on the green, putting for birdie. And I was thinking, well, that sure was easy.
It's simple, and, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's, you know, and especially that one par 5 on the front 9, where it is just not set up for me if it's in that tee box that's tucked into the wall. Like, that's set up for just a straight-up butter cut, and that is just not what I have in the bag, especially with a driver. So I hit a 3-wood, and I just hit it straight and landed right in the middle of the fairway. And it's like that. I think that's, like, the second time in the past few months that I've been in the fairway on that hole. And just hitting what you're comfortable with off the tee is just it helps so much.
Yeah. Well, you think, like, it's all, if you can hit driver really well consistently, it makes the game easy for you, because then you're just short irons away. But if it's not easy for you, you're going to make it way more difficult, because you're going to slice it into the woods or you're going to top it. It's like if you get really good with your 5-iron and you can hit that 190, 200 yards and you've got a, you know, 400-yard par 4, it's like you can just hit the same club twice.
Yeah.
And now you're either on the green or you're really close, and then you're putting for par. It's like, it doesn't have to be, you know, we don't have to take driver every time. And that's also like warming up on the range is where you can really start figuring out what you're comfortable with that day. You know, there'll be days where you go and you can't, you're just not hitting your driver. So it's like, it's better just not to take it out. But
yeah, I have finally come around to being okay hitting a few balls on the range before playing.
Yeah.
I will hit like half of a small bucket. And, you know, I'll just, but real quick, I'll just go through, you know, I'll hit a wedge and then I'll hit a 7-iron a couple times and then I'll hit my driver a couple times. And
yeah,
that'll just give me a feel of what I'm going to be doing that day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's what you got to do. The golf swing is a more athletic move than most people would like to admit. And talking with CJ, you know, I mean, it's been some episodes now ago, but talking about how, you know, physically we can improve, improving our fitness at home is something we all can do. And the golf swing is heavily based on two body parts, basically, or two parts of the body, the legs and the core. Those are the areas that we need to focus on when it comes to golf, our legs and core. They're the two main engines of the swing, and increased strength in those areas paid dividends on the course. So I thought that was super interesting because, you know, when we were talking about it with CJ, we were talking about, like, specifically, like, when you're at the gym, what you can do. But, like, if you're at home, like, planks, holding planks, being able to engage the core and that athletic feeling. Because when you're up on the ball, you need to be able to control your body from, you know, not swaying back, not standing up. A lot of that comes from being able to engage that core without being too tight. So incorporating planks into a home workout, as many leg workouts as you can do. Getting the calves, hamstrings, the, you know, the quads, even the butt, like all of those muscles you activate in your swing. And when those are strengthened, not only are you going to see like speed increases, but balance increases. And I thought that was a really huge point that they talked about a lot in some of these posts about improving at home, was improving your balance. Because a lot of times, like even me and you, well, when we hit poor shots, it's because, you know, when we went back, we stayed too far back. You know, we, our, our swing wasn't centered like from the start.
Yeah.
So fitness wise, improving in our core muscles, which is easy to do. You don't need anything. If you don't know what a plank is, I would watch a video on it. It's not fun, but
no,
if you can do those things, like if, you know, you can do work up to 10 seconds, 30 seconds a minute. If you can do to a point where your body is very core based, then when you're able to play golf, you're going to see a massive difference immediately.
Yeah. You know, that is very good advice, Cam. Or you can be like John Daly and you can drink some beers and be barefooted and, you know, just grip it and rip it as well.
That's God given talent.
But,
for people that don't that can't just do that,
us that's normal what people we have to work do. A little harder.
I thought this was really cool. This isn't something like physically for your skills or anything you can do, but it said regrip your clubs. And I mean, I know we both personally regripped our own clubs. It's not difficult at all.
I will never pay again for anyone else to regrip my clubs. It makes no sense.
It's not that they charge that much, but it's like, you know, what do they charge? Like $2 or $3 a grip.
I mean, but if you get Golf Pride grips for a whole set, it's gonna run you like $150.
Yeah. It definitely it'll save you like what, like $50 usually to do it yourself? Or more?
The stuff we got, it probably saved us $100, I think. I think it was like what, $50 for that kit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Saplies, I think, is the brand.
Yes, yes, that's what I got. Mm-hmm, the midsize,
yeah,
and it comes with from tape, Amazon. Tape grips, knife, solution. I mean, it's everything you need, yeah.
And
it's enough solution for like years.
Oh yeah, I still have enough of it. And I'm just gonna lean into it a little bit. I'm gonna go to Harbor Freight over here, and I'm gonna get like a little table and a vise.
Yeah.
And yeah, and just go, because I mean, a vise and a table isn't gonna cost more than $50 probably.
No, that was the one thing. Having a vise for like your driver, your longer clubs are helpful because you do have. I mean, it does take some. You know, strength to get it on, but if you can put something in a vise and do that, that makes it even easier. But they say you should regrip your clubs once a year, especially if you play. It's like, what is it, every
every 55 rounds or something like that.
So if you play like once a week, you should be at least regripping every year because they just wear down and you don't realize it until like they have no grip.
Yeah.
And then when you get new Golf Pride, you know, multi-compound fours put on there, they're like tacky as everything. And And that's something you can do at home. You know, even Amazon, those Saplize grips are fine.
They feel fine. They may be a little cheaper feeling than Golf Pride, but for the price, they feel good.
Yeah. I haven't had any slipping issues, you go into Golf Pride, you're going to get way more tacky and
they might last a little longer.
Yeah.
You know, but.
But if you're just wanting to try it out for your first time, that's what I thought, because I was thinking about going to midsize and I'm like, let me get a cheap, you know, grip set, see if I like the feel. And they've lasted me this long. Yeah. So anytime you regrip, just do it yourself.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I hate that I didn't switch to midsize grips a long time ago, because it feels just so much better. And when I went to Kuza to, get fitted for a new driver, you know, they had standard grips on them. And I was like, I don't know how I did this for so long. This feels horrible. I feel like I have no control over this at all. Definitely, I highly recommend just doing your grips yourself. It is very simple.
And it pays huge dividends. Like, not only does it save you money, because a lot of people don't regrip it because they're like, I don't want to spend the money. They're fine. When it's like, if all you do is buy the grips in a little grip kit that's not expensive, it takes, an hour and a half, 2 hours of your time, would you say?
Yeah. And I mean, just, you know. And you can break it up, do it on a day you're off, and I put on some music and I chilled out and did a few here and there.
When you're talking like golf specifically, having that tacky grip promotes a more relaxed grip, which promotes smoother, fluid swings. When you have less tension in your hands, you actually have a faster swing and more efficient swing. Yeah. So, you know, that's something you can do that you don't have to improve yourself at all to be better. If you don't know the last time you changed your grip, then that means you need to go get you know, changed. But it's very easy to do yourself. There's tons of videos of people doing it if you're a little nervous about it.
Yeah. We should, whenever we're ready to, either one of us, to change our grips, we should do a YouTube video on how to do it.
Yeah, because it's really simple. I've even seen, like, some of mine, I didn't even take the grip tape off that was on it already.
Yeah.
Like, I just put another piece on top of it.
Yeah. But we have midsize, so it might be a little easier for us.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know, like, for standard grips, I don't know if that would work. It might still. But
I've seen when you go, like, on Maltby and stuff, or any customization golf website, they put how many wraps, like, of tape you want.
That's true. Yeah, I have seen that. So I guess there's a preference. I mean, I don't feel a difference.
Maybe if somebody really likes, like, they're in between standard and midsize, then you would go standard with like three pieces of tape or something. I think that, because it splits the difference.
Yeah, and I think like Dustin Johnson has like three layers on the bottom half of the grip and then two layers on top or something like that to make it, you know, perfectly
even. You're so much
more
advanced than us.
Yeah. Like, I've been looking at a lot of videos on how, you know, players get their, you know, PGA players get their clubs fitted for them and even down to the grips and everything. It's like, you would figure a lot goes into it, but I just did not realize how much goes into what they have in their bag.
Yeah. And how that's why you can't compare yourselves to them.
Yeah.
Like, we want to swing like everyone sees Dustin's swing and they see how closed it is. And it's like, oh, if I do that, I don't slice it anymore. But it's like he has a draw driver. Like, yeah. Right? Doesn't he set his driver to draw?
It's set to a little bit of a draw just to kind of help him with that fade.
Which means that it's supposed to keep it low and open.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he close, like, but it's probably because if he doesn't do that, it closes too much.
Yeah.
That's just the way he swings. But it's like, you know, you do that with your regular driver and you try to be like him and you're, you know, pull hooking it every time.
No.
It's like, we watch them for entertainment, and then we go out there, and it's like, let me save one stroke today. Let me three-putt only three times.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I am very excited about my new driver that I'm getting. The M6 was not clicking for me.
It just didn't sound that good either. Off the face.
I do not like how it sounds. Like, even when I... And it gave me no feedback. Like, even when I hit it in the center, it felt like I hit nothing. Like, it was very strange. I didn't like that. It didn't give me any feedback. And so I sold it on eBay, and I went back to Ping. Because for the longest time, I had my Ping G30 LS Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I am getting the G410 LS Tech. And I'm very excited. It's got a fully forged face, and it's actually 455cc, so it's a little smaller head. Yeah. I love Ping drivers. They're just so good.
Yeah.
So,
and everyone set up excited. Like what sound they like, and I mean that just works for you. So, and it's all. I mean, when you had your other Ping driver, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really good.
And they're just so simple in their design. Like, I just love the design that they have for their drivers. And the G410 is actually the first Ping to be adjustable. Well, when I say adjustable, you know, they've had the loft adjustments for a while.
On your
hosel,
yeah.
But they now have a little on the back, a little sliding weight for fade, neutral, or draw. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other drivers, a lot of the other driver brands that did that, I never liked how it felt because it was on the, you know, bottom of the driver. And it just I just felt the weight a little strange feeling for me. But the way they have it on the back, very back of the driver now for the Ping, it just, the design makes perfect sense to me. And it just looks very sleek and not flashy, just very simple. And I'm very excited. I feel like if I put it to that fade setting, it might be perfect. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think it will too. Because the only bad drives you have are when they're overdone, when they're hooked.
Yeah, it's a toe, you know, duck hook.
Yeah,
is like my bad shot.
The gear effect puts extra spin on it, and
it
just pulls it left.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be great. I'd love once I get my irons done, my woods done, because my driver's fine. Like, the only thing I could use in my driver is a little more forgiveness. But distance, I don't need any to gain distance. I mean, I'll take some more distance.
Oh, no, you're...
But distance is fine. Yeah, it's like, so I need to go to maybe a more forgiving driver, which a newer one I'm sure would do that, but...
Yeah, I have a feeling that you need an X-stiff shaft.
It may.
Because the pro at Kuza said I was right on the border of a stiff to extra stiff.
For your irons too?
Well, I was just hitting driver, so I don't, oh, I don't know okay. about my irons, but for my driver shaft, I was like right at like 107, I think, was my highest swing speed, 108, something like that. And that's like right at the threshold. But obviously I don't swing that fast every time, so I stay with the regular stiff, but I mean, your swing speed has got to be over 110.
I would think.
With a driver.
Especially when I'm going after it. I mean, I try to swing a little slower, but I mean, probably close enough. And maybe that would help with why the face likes to stay open.
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably why some of your shots are so out of control slice, you know?
Yeah.
Is because the shaft is just flexing too much.
And then when I try to swing too soft, that's my tempo's off. No, there's
yeah.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to try. You know, I was looking into, like I said, when I was looking into my irons, and Maltby has that MPF rating system on all their on like all the shafts you can find.
Yeah.
And when I put what my club was for 150 yards and my driver speed, like because they're the same, it was like, you know, your 150 club is this driver speed. My 150 club is like my 9 iron. And when I did that, it said I immediately was extra stiff.
Yeah.
And I was
I think extra stiff is probably what you need, because you have a very fast swing speed.
I wonder if that would help with my irons, my long irons.
Oh, I'm sure it would help every single part of your game when it comes to the ball flight and the shape.
Yeah. Because then I can just swing. I don't have to worry about like slowing it down, because the... It'd be interesting. I'll try some, because I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, I wonder if I actually need to go up. But I don't think of myself as like a super fast swinger. But
no, you're Cameron. You are a super fast swinger. I watch it. I witness it every week. And it's fast. But it's not like you're trying to swing as hard as you can. It's just you have a big whip in your swing.
Yeah.
That's just how you are. And I think that... I just lost my thought. I think what you should do is, since you're going to replace your driver eventually anyway, go find a cheaper X-Stiff shaft on eBay and put it on your Titleist and see how it works. Because, I mean, you can always change it back if you wanted to.
But. Yeah. Yeah, and I'll, because that guy that does, who's not doing clubs anymore, but he still has his shop. He said if we needed like something one-off, you know, and it wasn't like super time sensitive, he would do it. Because the same thing, those Titleists have those adjustable hosels. So to change it out would be a little like specific. And so I'll ask him if he's got one over there.
I mean, you can get them on eBay too.
Oh, true. Okay.
Yeah. They're like, I think $5-$10, something like that.
Oh, okay. Then I'll try that, because maybe that will make a difference. I always thought because my ball flight was low that I wasn't like that I needed that extra kick, you know. But it could just be that my club head's getting left behind, and it's not kicking up enough because it's getting left behind. I'd like to see but all that like researching shafts, it's like, it is so confusing that you just need to hit them.
It's like, so many.
Anything I do tells me I need graphite iron shafts. Everything I look at, which seems crazy.
I feel like that's not I feel like that's more of a preference than anything. Like, I feel like you can, I don't know. I feel like you can still get steel shafts and it be fine for your game. I don't know.
That's what I thought. But when you, even looking through like, because the MPF rating that he Ralph Maltby puts on those shafts, most steel shafts are better for fixing hooks, like hook correction. But graphite is very neutral, like the way the club face closes. Steel shafts, I guess they have either less torque or something, that it's able to bring that club face in so that it doesn't leave it like, I don't know, but when I did anything that was neutral, it was all graphite because I never have hook problems. Huh. I don't hook the ball really ever unless I'm trying to hit a but it just doesn't really happen. And everything, there was not a single like iron shaft that I had seen before. There was a couple like really light steel shafts, like for like high handicaps. But everything that was like for my preferred ball flight and my speed, it was all that. But I was looking at stiff shafts. So maybe if I go to extra stiff, that's when I'll see the ones that probably would work for me. I don't know. I'll do some more research on that. Man. So much to think about.
Yeah. And are you going to try to get new irons before January 17th?
No, I won't be able to.
No. Okay.
That would be fun, but
yeah.
I think Sarah's going to get them for my anniversary. So that'll be March.
I got you. But yeah, January 17th, 2v2. Me and Cam versus Tony and Adam. And Adam's talking a lot of junk.
Yeah.
And a lot of trash. And his optimism is actually a little insulting. I'm not going to lie.
It is. Like, it's the opposite. I feel like they should be asking for two strokes. But he's talking about going out and he's playing these pro forged irons. And, like, he's hitting them. He's hitting his 4-iron, 2 hundos. Like, where was this when we were playing?
Yeah. Listen, I hit some blades one time in a Golfsmith when Golfsmith was open here. And I bought them. And because I was hitting them so good, I bought them, Kim. I bought blades. And then the next day, I go out on the course and I go, oh no.
Yeah.
This is horrible. I don't think people realize how much mats make it so much easier. Yeah.
You can swing so hard on a mat because if you hit a little fat, it's just going to bounce right back up and it's going to hit the ball so cleanly. It just gives you a false sense of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, plus he scoops the ball with the iron. So I don't know how that even works.
I fully believe that Adam and Tony can hit good shots and they have big potential. But right now, I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to say it though. The win is just certain for us. It is what it is. I said it. Oh well.
Well, now we're going to have to back it up.
And I'm fully prepared to back it up. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I like it.
If Adam's that confident, we'll go straight up.
Yeah.
If he's that confident.
Oh, no, I'm going to give him his stroke because that's the thing. If we go even, it's just...
Then I would say it wasn't going to happen, yeah.
But I still think it'll be competitive, and especially if they're on, it's going to be close. But I'm 100% confident that we'll pull out with a W.
Because they'll have 18 strokes. So if they'll need to hit... they'll have to be better than 90 to win.
Yeah. Yeah. And Adam said he shot like, what, 80?
Yeah. 80, like 4? 4 or something. Yep. That's different. There's a difference between playing by yourself and there's a difference between playing with a partner. Because you get a little more wild when you're playing with a partner.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little more at stake.
And they're brothers, so they might start to have a brotherly spat during the round. We'll see. But, I mean, I've played basketball with them, and it's I've seen them blow up at each other. It's hilarious. So we'll see.
It's going to be a good time. And we all know Charwood really well. So that's the thing. I think our putting is just – I don't.
Yeah, the putting and the chipping, our approach game.
Off the tee. Long irons, mid irons.
Yeah. We've been playing longer and we've played more than them and we are better golfers. That's why
we give the stroke, you know. But yeah, Adam's getting all this talking all this junk saying that after 9 holes that
they'll throw us a bone and go even with us.
Yeah, so we get those points back.
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll be the opposite, but we'll see. Maybe they'll surprise us, but I'm excited, and I hope when they're listening to this, this gets them pumped up.
Yeah,
because I'm very ready. I love being competitive, yeah. And I'm excited.
It's not going to be a blowout. I mean, because that means like if they bogey, we have to par. You know, so it's like it's not like there's going to be a lot of ties. Mm-hmm. But I just see them making more like doubles than us bogeying. Yeah. Which is that's
it. I feel pretty confident in us getting close to under par.
I think if we shoot more than like 7, well, it's a 71 course. So if we shoot like 72 or more, I think we'd had a bad day.
Yeah.
Because we both average like, I mean, you're what, a 5 now? 5, 6 handicap?
Yeah, I'm playing off like 5.5, I think, right now.
And I'm like in the 9s. So,
yeah.
You know, together where you know, we can play smart. I see us going under par. And that means that they're going to have to shoot in the mid 80s.
Yeah. But I'm very excited, and it's going to be good.
It's going to be a fun time. We're gonna have a good time. So that's the 17th,
mm-hmm.
And we've got to have him on. We got to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll have him. Yeah, we'll have him on for sure. Maybe we can have him on next week, the week before we play.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then
have
we'll
a smack then talk maybe podcast. And then after
we'll have him on again.
That sounds like a good plan. Well, I know you guys are going to be listening, so let's make it happen. And if Adam wants to win, he should probably, you know, help Tony putt a little bit.
Yeah.
Instead of messing with forged irons, Adam.
Yeah.
You might want to help your teammate.
I'm not going to be teaching Tony until we're back on the same team again. I'm sorry, but he's on his own for right now.
That's the thing. It's weird because, like, you know, I want to mess with Adam, but he's also my teammate when it's back to normal.
Yeah.
So it's like I want him to succeed, but not against me.
Yeah.
So it's like we'll see what happens. It's gonna be good. I know it's gonna eat at them as we keep talking about them.
That's good, and that's why we'll have him on next week to air it out.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Well, yeah, we'll have him on. I know you guys are listening, so figure out a way to get some good mics. And we'll get everybody on the podcast. So look forward to that next week. And we'll catch you guys then.
All right, guys. See y'all later.